This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Just finally from me, what's the last thing you say to your players before they leave the dressing room?
I'm not telling you. It's a private zone, and that'd be giving a lot of secrets away, so unfortunately I can't give you that information.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to celebrate the inevitable, Gerard is a winner, and now Villa only win. Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, and Mr. VillaUnderground.com, Dan Rogers. Welcome back.
Hello, mate.
Hello. How are you?
Cheer up, Chris Bird.
I'm very cheery, actually.
Thank you very much. Negative tones there.
No, none whatsoever. Gerard has joined the elite club of him and John Gregory. What a party for two that is.
This is the beginning of our unbeaten season. You'll look back on this as...
And Dan Rogers has got a good record at the moment of much better prophecies.
I've got a... If you need something to cheer you up, Chris, I could always sort you out with a Christmas jumper.
Ooh, I smell festive opportunity.
So we're against Brighton. Brighton were unbeaten away until they met the force of Gerrard. Crystal Palace were unbeaten at home. Steven Gerrard, destroyer of records, conqueror of worlds.
Maker of men.
Is he the real deal? We are finding out fast that I think he's a force for good, but we will discuss that later on. Coming up in the show, we will go through the latest Villa news, including Perslow's promises, two three points, which involve sex tapes. While most people spend most of the time researching Villa for a Villa podcast, we spent most of the time researching a sex tape for this podcast.
Our search histories are very interesting.
Trying to get to the bottom of it. I still don't think we understand it totally. Also, the fan-led review before we get into Media Muppets, and then the aforementioned game against Crystal Palace. How are you, gentlemen?
Not bad. Not too bad. Thank you. Gig last night down in Essex, which was quite amusing.
Ooh, getting around. When's the last time you went to Essex?
A couple of years, I would have thought. Been a while. Apparently the only way is Essex. I'm think it's open to debate, but
there are other ways. Does absence make the heart grow fonder when it comes to Essex?
In a word, no.
Dan Rogers. No. Enlighten me about your life.
Well, you know, as the world was ending, I kept refreshing the news with the dreadful storms that were going on. Everything seemed to be blowing away from Northern Ireland, so I expected Phil to appear on
on your front lawn.
My front lawn at any point. And then amidst the storm, Villa obviously had won the game, then amidst the storm, this postman staggered up my drive, and I'm not joking you, the Villa Underground Christmas jumpers arrived through sleet, hail, snow.
Those things could survive the apocalypse.
God, you're doing your damnedest to pluck these fucking jumpers.
I've got to get them out of my garage, man. People have got to get on there.
That's why he's doing this show. Now I know.
More importantly, how are you?
We won't ask about Phil Shaw.
No, don't bother.
I'm all right. I went out just to count the trees that had been ripped out of their roots by this storm. I stayed in through most of it, but it seems to be a pretty impressive one. There was a full-size tree snapped in half in Cannon Hill Park.
Yeah, well, over here, and we lost another of the Game of Thrones trees from the Dark Hedges. It's soon going to be just the Dark Hedge.
Just a bush.
Oh, dear. Right then, let's get into the villain news. I was quite disappointed that this wasn't a live notification and live Churchillian address to the Villa Nation by Christian Perslow, but it seems that while we wait for a fan consultation meeting, which we actually insisted on last week, because there's been so many things that have been pushed through with zero consultation that it's become a bit of a joke, but having a staged interview seems to be the best way of getting information across to fans, so there's no challenging of it.
Listen, if you're going to run a dictatorship, you've got to run it properly.
Fair enough.
There's no room for weakness.
Obviously, scouring the internet and seeing what was disgruntling Villa fans, one of the things was obviously this change of name at Company's House to V Sports, which I think is just the first step to trying to build an umbrella company for other football clubs, essentially, and investments into other football clubs. So you haven't got that Villa branding if you're suddenly buying. I remember under Dr. Tony, they were looking to get a Danish club, and that was going to be announced. This was after a fan consultation group meeting, they told us. And then the next month when it was meant to be announced, nobody ever heard about it again. But it's just an easier way of managing it, isn't it, to have an umbrella name that, although linked to Villa, is not Aston Villa, because there's reasons why they change names as well, for financial hallucinogenics.
Plus it will allow us to sneak up on Birmingham City and just quietly acquire them.
Turn them into a car park.
Why would you want to buy a depreciating asset like that?
No.
That's
huge.
All part of the expansion of the train station.
Yeah. Or huge value in scrap metal as well. That stadium is almost, it's dismantling itself, actually.
Well, the main thruster, as well as first impressions on Stevie Gerrard, mention of the January window where he said normally they wouldn't have even entertained anything, but if Stephen Gerrard wants anything, there might be some room for some tweaks here and there. So,
and that's ins as well as outs. He said, there may be people out the door, which would be probably less of a surprise.
Don't be refreshing your Twitter feed every bloody second, because there's not going to be that many. I mean, I remember last window when Perslow did his address after the Grealish Swaparooney transfer, when he said that was pretty much it, August the 5th. And I said, when you watch that video, it's pretty much it. People said, no, it's just the beginning. We're going to spend 100 million. And it's like, well, we just spent it. Didn't you pay notice to Danny Ings, Buendia coming in, and Bailey? So this is not a throw the money at the wall routine now. This is a very, they've got to the level where they've got a squad now. Now it's only...
And a manager.
And a manager. And now it's just a matter, it's tweaking and improving. And so it's not going to be wild buying transfer parties every window. He also mentioned that... this is kind of an ongoing saga, the whole stadium expansion, but it seems to be pushing it a bit more as a going concern. Although he did mention that they were looking at plans, and I thought all the plans were all kind of sorted out, so I don't know what that entails.
Well, you mentioned it was like a three-stage thing, wasn't it? It was the actual expansion of the stadium, the commercial operations, and the big one, he said, which was linked to the latest version of the waiting list, which is apparently 20,000.
No, it's 200,000.
250 million was that a lot of it is based around the corporate stuff.
It was quite a corporate address, really, in that respect. But the main thing is you can't go expanding until you've sorted out the transport situation leaving Villa Park, whether it's on the road or trains, because at the moment it's just not fit for purpose. I mean, it's
it's as bad as any...
It's inhumane.
It is. It is. It's as bad as any. I mean, we've all been to plenty of away grounds in the UK, yeah. Europe. I can't think of many other worse. Like genuinely, and that's embarrassing, really.
It's like you feel you have to go through, you have to be humiliated to get home. Like you have to stand in a queue for like a couple of hours, and then even then the train may not come, or it may leave before it fills up. It's a situation that really needs some proper organisation. The problem is the bureaucracy at rail companies is tedious. The amount of times we've been, you know, lobbying the club to speak to the regional rail just to paint that bloody Witton Bridge, the train station bridge there, because it just makes the whole area look shit. So as well as doing a favour to the local residents, you're also given a better impression when away fans come to town. They say it's not a total squalor, but that bridge just makes it look like a run-down, shabby...
Well, that's the irony, isn't it? Villa want to... polish their jewel, if you like, in the heart of Aston and the infrastructure in the immediate area. Bear in mind, you've got, you know, there are some quite straightforward things that you could do quite quickly, and it's baffled me it's took to now to even talk about it.
Bulldozing. sorry.
it's one of a number of suggestions I put forward. But not that there hasn't been a discussion. There is zero plan. That it's bad enough getting 40,000 people away. You know, you've got people talking about 2 and 3 hour journey times to get away from Villa Park. What's your incentive? You know, what is our incentive to go to 50,000 knowing that? Because the match day experience is defined, I think, for a lot of people by just how... I mean, my first experience was, we mentioned it in the last pod, of just how bad the trains are. I normally drive in. Driving is dreadful. I normally bike in.
That's just through desperation, by the way. I don't want to fuck around on trains anymore and getting out. And, you know, this game where we kind of met up before, so we were going to go back on the train together into town to, you know, have some drinks, and we had to walk home just because, you know, you just couldn't do it.
No, I just think that where this isn't all on the club, by the way, where the hell are they?
Multi-agency, don't they?
Yeah, sorry, just the club, in terms of that bridge, the club had offered to pay, I think, 2 or 3 times in my time, you know, talking to them about it. They'd offered to pay for the painting, but it's just that the regional rail just could not organise it or didn't want to organise it.
And there's a couple of straightforward things you can do. I mean, with the roads, it still amazes me, like other grounds, that certain places don't go to a one-way system. Or we do other things that you've got to incentivise people, you know, just a small percentage of people to stay back after the game, put something on, you know,
and ice rink or something.
Let's break some necks, baby.
Well, I could, again,
drunken ice ring.
List of suggestions.
Big bar.
Paintballing in Aston Park.
Paintballing on the ice rink while drunk. I think that's how you kind of help the flow out of the ground.
Suggestion, I mean, you know, box.
The amount of people that left before Villa won the game against Brighton was you know, we're on the way home thinking it was 0-0,
and they were just 10, you know, they were, all they got to do was watch the train leave half empty in front of them. They didn't actually get to go on it.
Right, anyway, let's carry on. We will see what happens, but it's like it needs to be, let's not have the cart before the horse. There needs to they need to sort out that transport infrastructure before they start pulling more people in, I would say. Dr. Mings is a thing after Tyrone Mings was awarded an honorary doctorate of education from Bath Spa University. Were they celebrating his rags to riches rise? Why did he get that?
Well, cynical would say he was born and raised in Bath and is a highly respected and inspirational figure in the local community, reading directly from the university's website. But
now say what you really think, Phil.
So what's the real take, Phil?
The real take is he was wearing a very silly hat, but he got a doctorate. And they did make out that he... they did tell the story that he was rejected by a Premier League club at 16 and did work his way up through the ranks again. So he's a story of people that, you know, keep
battler,
trying.
A battler,
yeah,
exactly.
You'll get there in the end.
And all that.
Yeah.
Quite extraordinary that he joined the lowly Aston Villa.
Yeah. A battler, a good example to us all. Meanwhile, the under-23s were victorious against Burnley in front of Stephen Gerrard and his staff as they had a big get-together on Monday night. But the weather has took hold of their next fixture. The under-18s, they're back in action with the Youth Cup this week, is it not? Next week.
Yeah, they've got. Is it Leicester? I think they play Leicester, don't they?
Speaking of the youth team, they have signed a new player from Coventry, Terry Katsakunya, who is a defender. Spent big on him. Is that just Coventry playing hardball, or is he super talented?
They said six figures, but that could be 100 grand or 999,000, couldn't it? So, we shall see.
Or 100 quid and loads of shrapnel in the other end of the decimal place.
Right, it's time for Media Muppets. So, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week? Surely not our old friends.
No, we'll give them a break this week, just in case we get accused of picking on them. So it's the Chuckwameka saga. Now, it's starting a bit early. It was started by The Guardian and their chief correspondent, David Heitner. Now, he wrote in The Guardian that Carney Chuckwameka will not sign a new contract at Aston Villa. Very definitive there. He will not sign a new contract, putting England's biggest clubs on alert, including Manchester City, Manchester United and Liverpool. He goes on to say that the 18-year-old midfielder, rated as one of England's most promising talents, has decided his future does not lie with Villa, having grown frustrated at his lack of first team opportunity. There's a few questions this week. How does Carney know this when there's a new boss just straight in the door? And there is a pathway, as you can see, with Jacob Ramsey in the team.
And Gerrard's first job was head coach of the Academy of Liverpool.
Yeah, so if anything, the pathway has opened even further. But
are you calling bullshit, Mr. Shaw?
I am calling bullshit, but even this, Mr. Heitner knows this because...
Mr. Heitner?
Yeah, despite this being his first Villa article since a fluff piece in Grealish during the Euros, he goes, Chuckwameka does not see it. He has no issue with Villa's new manager, Gerrard, who replaced Dean Smith this month. Rather, he has come to fear that the club will most likely rely on established players or signings at the expense of promoting youngsters. Well, I'm sorry.
Like every club in... Yeah. In professional sport?
Ever, yes.
So what is the Guardian sports editor or football editor doing here? If I was in that position, I'd read this. So I was like, what's this? Why are we paying you?
Yes, especially since he's got 2 years left on his contract, and it's a year before he can even go into like a pre-agreement with another club, so there's plenty of time. Yeah. TalkSport, of course, jumped in the back of this, and you can see by the link in their website for the clickbait, it was Man City, Man United transfer news, Carney Chuckwameka. So that's
a good headline. You've got to give them that.
Yeah,
it's solid.
They were doing this with Keenan Davis. It was like Manchester United, Arsenal, Manchester City. Like basically stuff as many keyword big clubs with massive audiences in the headline to get them reading it.
It'll be off.
These are not articles for Villa fans. These are articles for the Manchester United fans, Manchester City.
For everyone else, isn't it?
Yeah, interesting.
He's taking notes. He's getting a bit of hype. Let's put him on the national.
Yeah, actually, I think I might start doing that. I'm going to re-fire up myomansaid.com and just angle it to Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea.
Nice new red colour scheme.
No, you don't need to go that far. I'm just basically going to link Manchester United every day of the week to all of our players in 20 separate articles.
I mean, we could run like a guerrilla marketing campaign, couldn't we? We could just basically start writing articles about Vasilev and just put those clubs in. We could maybe get him transferred for an exorbitant fee just by building his stock.
Yeah, every day another big Liverpool in for Vasilev after he impresses in Miami.
An unnamed source. Feel sure.
Yeah, we know the equation here. Right, into the 3 points. First of all, the government's fan-led review was launched on the 24th of November. This is something behind the scenes I've been involved with in a little bit. I've had a meeting, a few meetings through the Football Sports Association and with Tracy Crouch and her committee that was set up to look into this. Many supporters and supporter groups did give their input, and that forms the basis of a lot of what is in the report, which is very thorough. It's almost 200 pages. And we had a meeting with Tracy Crouch after the launch on Friday last week. David Michael is actually credited in the report as well, on the same page as Christian Purslow, who came out and did the rounds for the Premier League. Wasn't too happy with the idea of an independent adjudicator.
Doesn't work in a dictatorship. I've said this already.
Yep.
Pay attention.
I mean, this is something you need. You would need to really understand what that actually curtails. I mean, speaking to Tracy on Friday, she was saying this is something that potentially could be absorbed into the FA. I mean, one of the reasons why we're at this point in football, and as we say on this podcast, this the whole industry, it's just imploding. You can't have clubs going into liquidation, and you can't have like big clubs like Villa being in a situation where they can't even pay their tax bill. I mean, this is a review of the governance of football more than anything else.
Well, you've got Spurs at the moment with a debt north of £750 million, which is not sustainable on any balance sheet.
No, and the government, and this is cross-party as well. when you look at it, if you look at the Conservatives as a party, one of the things their mantras is not to interfere, in terms of business and free markets, etc. But it's got so bad, football, that even the Conservatives are talking about independent regulators and having to step in here. So that's how bad it is.
I mean, he didn't get his job at the UN. They could bring Matt Hancock across to sort this mess out, couldn't they? He would do a fine job.
So this is something that, I mean, all supporters should be haranguing their MPs about, and, you know, really, this is, you know, it's a once in a generation chance to improve football. I mean, most football fans, and, you know, I'm not pointing the finger, but, you know, most are just happy to buy merchandise, go to the odd game, and they're mainly passive consumers, and when they've got anything to moan about, just moan about it on Twitter. But this is a real opportunity to actually do something, and there's a pathway now, and that, you know, the government and all political parties are behind it. And, you know, apart from Purslow, there's a few Premier clubs as well. But no, I mean, Christian Purslow across the board is, in terms of if it's a holistic approach, appreciates that a lot of things, you know, have to change. And I think his only issue was this, the regulator, and also the idea of trickling more money down the pyramid. And do you get punished for being successful, I think, was the mantra of what he was saying. And there's also a question of if you've got incompetent below and you're giving them money and that money's being squandered, then it's a bit of a fruitless task, isn't it? Why get punished and have to put more money down the pyramid if it's actually just being wasted? So the lower leagues have to pull up their socks. But it's 188 pages. I mean, I'll go into more details elsewhere. I'll probably do a
If you could circulate a summary, please, David, that'd be appreciated.
just some bullet points will do.
Yeah. Right, point number two. Bizarre game in Portugal. Benfica's match against Belenenses was abandoned amid farcical COVID disruption. That's what it says here.
That's what it does say there.
Now, you would imagine this game would not happen in the Premier League. Belenenses couldn't actually field 11 players due to COVID illnesses. So they went into the game with 9 players, started with 9. Benfica was 7-0 up. And by the way, that 9 players included 2 goalkeepers, so one goalkeeper playing outfield.
That's why Villa stockpiled 5 keepers, just in case. Contingency.
Yeah, because of the... You're going to put Kalinic up front, you never know what's going to happen.
The match was called off a minute into the second half when the opposition were left with just 7 players. And the rules are you've got to... it has to be called off if it goes below 7, isn't it?
Yeah, so they came out after the second half with 7, someone goes down. It's like, well, we can't play now.
Yeah, so it was called off. So, you know, this is like after COVID testing, 17 cases were found. This is before the game, amongst players and staff. Now, that is...
Surely you just lock the club down? You wouldn't let them travel.
Lock down the club and postpone the fixture. That's what happens in normal.
You wouldn't want
league.
To be mixing with the survivors either, would you? Just, we'll forfeit.
But, you know, Benfica president Rui Costa said his side was forced to play, and said so he's blaming it basically at the foot of the Portuguese Football Association,
which looks pretty fair, to be honest.
He said he called it a dark chapter for Portuguese football. So this, you know, loop this back to why you needed a fan-led review of football governance. It's because the people who run the game are incompetent, and here's another example. Anyway, moving on swiftly and on to this aforementioned sex tape.
the moment you've all been waiting for.
Yeah, Karim Benzema has finally been found guilty in this sex tape blackmail scandal. I mean, just recap. Mateo Valbuena, who was a French international player alongside Benzema, there was a tape of his, sex tape, involving him, and somebody was threatened to get it out there. There was is it 5 other people involved? I don't know if they're all in the actual sex tape.
Yeah, I haven't seen the tape.
But Benzema and four other people were on trial, and they were actually handed jail sentences ranging from 18 months suspended to 2.5 years in prison. Benzema got a one-year suspended jail term in order to pay a £63,000 fine. I mean, ultimately, he was encouraging Valbuena to pay the amount because he said these were like some heavy-duty thugs. But I still don't understand if he was doing it to take a cut. And, you know, why would you blackmail somebody, unless he didn't like him, to take a, you know, how much money has Benzema got? Why would he want to take a cut from a blackmail on a sex tape? That's the bit I don't clearly understand.
It just must have been a very, very good tape. We have to just boil this down to simple urges, I think, that it was clearly worth $84,000 or euros to him. So, yeah.
It's worth Googling that and having a dig yourself because this is only 3 points.
Use a VPN if you're Googling it.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this game, shall we? Game number two. Win number two for Gerard. As I said earlier on, this was always going to be... I had a good feeling about this game. I mean, I built it up in the something for the weekend saying, you know, Palace, 7-game run, unbeaten run, unbeaten at home. But they just draw all the games, don't they? So it was always something that if Villa could just keep it tight and then hit them on the break. But was you surprised by the starting lineup? Because Young came in. Bailey started, probably your first impulse is thinking, yeah, maybe we're a bit lightweight here, but I get the counter-attacking setup here to obviously have Bailey's speed and Watkins' speed up top. Thoughts?
It was the look of, you know, he was rewarding the team that got them over the line in the last 10 minutes against Brighton. You know, that side finished well, and I think he was impressed with Ramsey's performance for, you know, the sort of 70-odd minutes he was on against Brighton. And from what we gather in the press conferences, he's been glowing about his training performances, so put him in as well. And it certainly looked a lot more of a balanced team.
I was surprised that Bailey started, from what you said, because he didn't seem 100% fit in any time we've seen him so far, but he lasted more minutes than usual in this one.
Yeah, and was pretty effective. In the first half, you can see just... by the way they shaped up defensively, Crystal Palace, you could understand why they were getting, you know, so many draws. But Villa were forcing the issue. But the good thing about Bailey was there was a bit of an, you know, unpredictability about his play, and he was useful in terms of trying to, you know, pull apart that kind of rigid two-bank defensive system that Palace had.
Don't you think as well, with it is important to get game time in the Premier League as well? And I mean, we've spoken about the three new arrivals really hadn't had that much time together, but Bailey hasn't played much football at all, really.
Yeah.
So getting him in there, and I think you could see that he had a role to play, but there are a few characters in that squad who I think look completely different to how they were under Smith. It's, you know, Matt Target's been, to use Phil's phrase, has been reprogrammed into, I don't know, Philip Lahm or something like that. And, you know, Nakamba's clearly going for African Player of the Year on the basis of the last 180 minutes. And it's, you know, the likes of Bailey. I thought Bailey played with an intensity that I'd not seen him play before. You know, there was a moment where he lost the ball in the first half where he won it back and, you know, almost led to a goal. And you think, well, that's, you know, following team instructions, but getting up to speed as well, getting up to the speed of the Premier League.
Yeah, because, I mean, the simplest recipe for getting this Villa team back on its feet again was go back to what was good about the defence, i.e. back four, you know, the personnel. Martinez, no pissing around.
I was going to say, no piss-arsing around with the defence, aren't I?
You know, no back threes when... I understand that the back three, when you... got a particular opponent in mind, but when I think we said it in Matchclub, when you revert back to the back four because the back three is not working anymore, and then you drop Mings on the first time you do it when you kind of need him against West Ham, and you should be going back, you know, the cliche, go back to basics. This back four was pretty successful last season, so go back to that. Don't piss around. It's exactly what Gerard's done. Now, the main the main key to unlock this Villa team, and Smith never got to the root of it. And, you know, obviously he's had a lot of injuries this season, so he's never really had a full deck to play with, was to get that balance in the midfield. And Ramsey and Nakamba did provide a dynamic and balanced presence. I mean, Ramsey was certainly doing well in terms of linking, the phases of the team from defence, midfield to attack. And, you know, Nakamba just gave us more bite than we normally have. And gives McGinn a bit of freedom as well.
Yes. If you're picking a three for the Villa midfield out of all the options available, they're probably the three least fashionable choices you would pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Ramsey is catching the eye, isn't he, at the moment? And, you know, seems to be getting lots of praise from all quarters, but warranted as well. And you're absolutely right about what you say about McGinn. McGinn looks like, I mean, we over the years we've done this podcast, we've had plenty of midfielders who felt shackled, and he feels off, you know, off the leash a little bit, and very, very dangerous against Palace. And, you know, his goal was outstanding. But his contribution across the 90 minutes was superb as well. And that wasn't something you could say consistently towards the end of the Smith reign.
Yeah, because, you know, as I've said before, that the best 11 players that Villa have got aren't necessarily our first 11. And I think this definitely applies with the Ramsey-Nakamba situation in terms of enabling us to play effectively with that front three, whether it's Watkins, Bailey and Ings, or Watkins, Bailey and Young. As in this case, it's I don't know. It just seems to work.
And for the first time, you looked at the selection and you actually looked at our bench, probably for one of the few times this season. And you're looking at sort of Buendia, Louise, El Ghazi. You've got Danny Ings on there. You're thinking, actually, that's got the shapings of not a bad match day squad now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were joking before earlier on in the season when we had Bailey and Buendia on the bench, you know, saying, oh, we've got two £30 million players on the bench now. This is, you know, we're on the up. Problem is, we didn't have much on the field at the same time.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I mean, in the first half, I thought, this is how you want to see Villa play away from home. This is like the par. Now, if you know we're going to get beat in a game, then the opposition have got to play really well to beat that kind of level of what we put out against Palace in the first half. I mean, what do you think were the main contributors to the success of that first half dominance?
I think there's a balance, a natural balance in terms of just your personnel. I think because they know the defensive shape and he's built them to be solid. When you look at things like the possession stats, I think Palace had over 60% of the ball, but you saw it against Brighton as well. We're becoming quite efficient when we actually get the ball. We're actually using it in a productive way rather than kind of, as we've seen down the years, you know, aimless passing that doesn't go anywhere. I don't think that, you know, Gerrard wants to play a ball retention based game, but at the moment that might not suit our personnel. So it's about getting the best out of what we've got. And we've got pace to burn in wide areas with a number of personnel. We've got a little bit of mobility in the middle of the park now with someone like a Ramsey. McGinn, that little bit further forward, gives you a bit more bite and he can drop in, but he also gives you the drive that you need. And with Nakamba, I think he gives you a really solid base to build off, whereas Louise is clearly the better ball player. But in terms of the simple job of what a number six is to do...
Or is he?
When he is to disrupt.
When he came on, he was a sloppy old boy, wasn't he, old Louise?
Well, he hasn't played for a while, has he?
Yeah. What do you think of, like... I thought Bailey and Young were quite narrow, actually. They weren't playing, like, out-and-out, let's say, wide forwards. They were...
Well, they step in, don't they? Yeah. And it allows the wing-backs to bomb on, which is exactly how Rangers played.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that what it created was it crowded Palace and it allowed us to play with more intensity, and that made Vieira's side, I thought they looked very nervy on the ball. It forced errors, and there were two or three times, first off particularly, where it caught. Well, the one that sticks in my mind, there was where the McGinn deflected cross caused absolute disarray because Villa were moving triangles really around them, and I think that intensity in the press is proving very effective. You can't keep it up over 90 minutes, but I think when you layer that with what I see to be, I felt we'd become a bit nice under Smith, and there were, I counted six or seven moments where the dark arts were for once being deployed by us. You know, whenever the ball went dead, it took us an age to do anything with it, you know, in the first half as well.
There was a defining moment because they started to get ahead of steam later on, and momentum switched to them, and then you saw the dark arts in play where Martinez certainly had a real bad case of cramp. And mysteriously, it just took like a couple of minutes.
It was.
And you thought, oh, that's him out for the season.
And
but
he immediately
really.
Pumped the ball up the pitch full force with the dead leg.
whole idea of that was to take the sting out of Palace because they were getting, you know, the upper hand.
Well, I mean, even in the first half, the whole match in film was a feisty enough game. The tackles were flying in from especially from Palace, and that just showed how frustrated they were getting as Villa passed their way around them, and the referee didn't control the tackles at all. I mean, there's plenty of tackles on the Palace end that could have been, you know, a second yellow or even a red in some cases.
The referee auditioning for the part of Forrest Gump, mostly, I thought, for the afternoon.
I thought he was dreadful. Actually,
they got young pretty badly
sides,
and
wasn't it
through the back. I mean, that was a nasty one.
Oh, yeah.
We said at halftime in Match Club, we wouldn't bet against a red card in the second half here. We didn't expect it, the most likely candidate, to actually be a substitute when Douglas Luiz came on.
He was desperate to send Luiz. He ran across with his cock
windmilling. He couldn't get it out
fast enough, could he? Because he'd been a bit sloppy, I thought, oh, for fuck's sake. Sell him to Manchester City now. But then when you saw the replay, you thought, there's no way that's a red card.
There's nothing in it. The crazy thing about that was one earlier. I think it was Nakamba. Nakamba comes across one of their guys and catches him on the ankle, gets a yellow. Far, far worse challenge.
Yeah,
and the one with Luiz, there was just nothing, even live. You're like, what have you seen that no one else has seen, you blithering idiot?
Yeah, the Nakamba one was a big enough moment in the match because he wiped out Zaha, and then the ball broke through to, I can think it broke through to Benteke, and the referee didn't play advantage, or else Villa could have been in a bit of trouble there.
Yeah.
Again, that was another poor decision. You'd say as a neutral, you'd be like, the ref actually didn't have a very good game for both teams. You know, Watkins was clean through, wasn't he, and got wiped out, which was probably, you know, on some days that would be a red as well.
There was three alleged Watkins penalty shouts. I'm sitting here, I don't feel hard done by any of them, really. I think I can't remember it cleanly. I can remember the second one and the third one.
First one, he went down very easy, didn't he?
Yeah. Right, because the third one, the guy actually got the ball twice. And we did talk about this, how Watkins isn't convincing when he's diving, is he?
No. he's no Bruno Fernandes, is he?
He's not going to win an Oscar, is he, at this rate?
And I think that affected his... He probably had a more reasonable shout later on in the game, but if you've sort of collapsed to the ground like he did for the other couple, it doesn't...
Because I think... the main reason was he was always in situations where he had three men on. And so... You know, whether you're a referee or any football fan, you're looking at that and you're thinking that's a hopeless task. And so you're expecting him to go down because the players think, oh, fuck me, this is a hopeless task. That's trying to win a penalty here. And, you can see it coming a mile off.
I think it's his
how predictable.
Style. Yeah, it's his playing style as well, because you wouldn't say that he's got close control. I mean, you look at somebody like Buendia, when the ball comes in to him, the ball is like stuck to his feet. Watkins, the ball is always just, you know, half a yard in front of his foot is the way he plays, so that he can knock it past somebody and run. If the ball's like never at his feet, it's just always ahead. So it gives players, defenders just step in front of him. And then while it may be a penalty, it should be a penalty, it just doesn't look like it because it looks like he's actually lost control, but he's so quick that he hasn't lost control.
Yeah. But what about you guys? Anybody think we were hard done by in any of those penalty shouts?
I think you're naturally, obviously, don't feel hard done by because it didn't affect the result. You know, we've been on the receiving end of some absolute dog turd decisions from referees, especially at Selhurst Park in previous years. Note Lansbury decision that could have been defining in Villa's, you know, recent future. Recent past, sorry. This one, it's like you get away with 3 points. You actually go, well, do you know what? Actually, we did enough without the decisions to get the win anyway. So
yeah, but what about the decisions?
I don't feel hard done by. They're not stonewallers for me, none of them.
No, I didn't think so either.
Now, the ones, that's not to say you haven't seen them given, because you've seen some garbage given, but I don't. They're one of those ones that if that goes against you, I think you're annoyed.
I think the concern is, and this one I was more concerned about the standard of officiating, really, that he was so inconsistent, and I don't know whether, in fact, it was his first Premier League game. It didn't give you any confidence. You know, he was shit to both teams, ultimately.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was.
But if that big decision had come, and that I worry about, especially in the scenario at the moment where VAR basically allows the on-field referee to make a call. I was not confident at all with him going up to that screen and checking the Luis decision.
Yeah, that was like a bonus, wasn't it? When he stayed on, like, oh, bonus.
I mean, brandishing the red second time did you know, smash a keyboard?
Confused everyone twice. All
right, there you go. That's 6-game suspension. You got 2 red cards.
But I've no idea how Milojevic stayed on for hacking down Watkins, because I mean, they said there was another defender there, but Watkins was in the process of running past the other defender to have the shot.
Not a goal scoring opportunity. When did that definition change?
It was as blatant a red card as you'll ever see. I couldn't get that.
But it came immediately after the Luis decision, didn't it? And he was never in a million years going to send anyone off it for the home side.
Yeah.
Wanker.
I think the fact that they had a defender close probably saved their guy there, because I think actually he made no attempt to play the ball there.
Yeah.
But because there was a defender close, that was probably enough of a doubt in the referee's mind that he thought, well, was Watkins actually going to score there?
We'd be talking about this very differently if McGinn hadn't gone on to score and they get a scabby late goal.
Yeah,
I think that
absolutely.
Would be my... That's where I get fucked off with shit officials, because I think it doesn't balance out, does it, really? It's because you have to make your own luck.
Because we've got the win, we can kind of be a bit more pragmatic and go, yes, he was dreadful, but luckily it didn't affect us.
Palace did shift up through the gears, and we started to get deeper and deeper. I'm still surprised they scored, though, with their little scabby goal, as you called it.
It was a scabby.
Did you think perhaps we might have thought, well, this game's won, so we could relax? Well, I mean, it's pretty late when we got the second goal.
I think it was just an awful cross. It wasn't even a good cross. It was the fact that it sort of bounced and went in the end of that no man's land, and he didn't even get a clean connection. He just sort of studded it past Martinez.
Yeah, Martinez sort of dives, expected him to hit it cleanly, and it kind of just rolls under.
Yeah, but it was too little too late, so you know, it wasn't that bad. It just took the gloss off Gerrard's desires for clean sheets.
But I'm really, in terms of our goals, I'm really pleased for both goal scorers. You know, Target's kind of looked a different player the last two games, and the, you know, getting his sort of customary once a season goal will give him a no end of confidence. And I was really surprised to read that was the 10th goal that Palace have conceded already this season from a set piece, which is woeful.
Good job we've got a specialist coach in the to work these things out.
Luckily, we've got two.
For a team that was unbeaten at home, that's drawn so many games, I didn't think, I thought there would be, the basis of that was through sound defence, especially against set pieces. I was surprised to hear that.
They weren't great on the day. And then I think actually the real, everything that Gerrard has talked about how he wants to play, I thought transpired with our second goal. You know, some great movement and interplay through midfield.
It was a gentleman's explosion moment, wasn't it, that one?
It was.
That was finally where you saw Villa make more than 3 passes. Consecutive passes.
Yeah,
it was like
incisive play around the penalty area, which we haven't seen a lot of, really, especially this season.
But we have it in our team. We have it in our players. I mean, under Smith, there was moments where you're expecting to play like this. Let's be honest about this. You expect to play like that more frequently. You know, when you go back to that goal against Arsenal, where we hunt back 20 odd passes before we put it in the net in the 3-0 game last season, and you think this is what the Smith mantra is going to be all about, you know, attacking, free flowing passing, and we hardly saw that in recent times anyway. So it was great to see that, and you thought that El Ghazi had spunk the chance, but it was El Assisti instead.
Well, I mean, he's got El Ghazi nailed down now, doesn't he? He's worked out that you need distilled El Ghazi. You don't need the full 90 minutes. You need him concentrated down into that 15 minutes of good El Ghazi and just use it, just when to use him.
Yeah,
it's reverse, Karim.
Yeah, I was just about to say, we all know that, when we went through that period where training ground players were mentioned, I think it was by Smith, and we started to second guess who were the training ground players, and we know that El Ghazi is a training ground player. And Gerrard's, obviously new manager comes in, and it's the old fresh slate. So he's judging them a lot on training ground. And obviously Al Ghazi is a good training ground player. So that's why he's getting in. But as you say, it's right. I think he works as a sub because he does. I mean, he's always been able to impact games. That's the thing.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, you look at his stats last season compared to like a Grealish. And actually, in terms of assists and goals, he generally delivers stuff.
Yeah.
Relatively consistently.
And that's not playing a lot as well.
It's just his overall output 90 minutes elsewhere on the field that frustrates the crap out of
him. But that's where you can't be reliant upon players like I've got. And it's the sentiment thing, isn't it? That I think that easier that someone could say, well, easily of me, you know, you're just, you know, scapegoating type A, or you're always backing him out. I just don't think he gets into many or any teams who are above us in the league, you know, and that's... Yeah. You know, I think if we're in a Perslow spirit of continuous improvement, I don't think Al Ghazi is it. But in that moment,
I don't think he's a starter. I quite like him as a member of our squad. I think he can be a useful asset. But I agree in terms of moving forward. Is he going to be?
Well, you saw in the goal what he can do.
Have to level up.
You know, it was good link up. Yep. You know, the movement behind Buendia. I mean, I did not see Buendia making that pass because he was facing the other bloody way. So the Palace defence never saw that pass coming. But he finds McGinn, and that's all you've got to do, haven't you? You know.
And it's great for McGinn as well. You know, the amount of times I've been frustrated at Villa Park when you see the ball fall to him on the edge of the penalty area on his right foot. And I think he said after the game, didn't he, that the manager's just been telling him, if you're anywhere near the penalty area, have a crack.
Yeah.
Because we've seen what he can do. He's got an absolute hammer of a left foot. And actually, it was a McGinn side foot.
Sorry, you can't use that word hammer of a left foot. That is trademarked by Tommy Hitzlsperger. We would get sued.
Okay.
You can't refer to it as a wand of a left foot either, because that's Steve Staunton.
Yeah. So there's no wands, there's no hammers. What are we looking at? Thunderbolts?
So what, maybe
go, something Scottish related.
Go for the cliched Scottish, I don't know. An iron brew of a left foot, I don't know.
An iron brew of a left foot, there we go, that'll do.
Tossing the caber, a caber of a left foot.
Oh, there you go.
But it's great just to start seeing him getting into those positions.
Yeah, well, he's already equaled his goal tally for the previous two seasons, so... Hopefully he's going to break that.
Which is bad, really, for a player of his ability. Yeah. It shows how, as David said earlier, he has been shackled, but you put him in those areas.
I didn't
areas
say
like
he was shackled. You
Scotland.
Said he's shackled. I just said he's crap.
It was me. I was shackling him.
I said he's been hot and cold. I didn't say it this episode, but previous episode, it's been hot and cold. And if he is a good player, we're not getting the best out of him.
No, and certainly not consistently. You see moments like Palace and you think, actually, that's where you want to see him.
And I think I think that's very much on Gerrard's radar, is how do I get the best out of him? Because I like him. I think he's a good player. How do I get the best out of him? You don't want him You don't want him misplacing passes on the halfway line. You need him further up, don't you?
And you don't want him taking the ball off the back four either.
No, you want his energy, whether it's pressing or, you know, just harassing in the opposition's half to help Watkins.
Went very, very close in the first half after, I think it was Watkins retrieved it on touchline, and he had a curling effort that was really close, I thought.
Mm-hmm. That was early, wasn't
it? He was very dangerous. Yeah, he was very dangerous. I mean, that deflected cross that Palace almost managed to knob into their own net. but although we had a pretty good go ourselves, actually, second half.
Yeah,
we had
the cash one.
Cash
tried to fire a ball up Konza's arse.
That Polish chap with his new Polish ways.
I think across the field, you can just see already just a little bit of confidence and belief.
Yeah, Cash, a very good game again. Very, very good game.
I thought both fullbacks again have
Since he's become Polish, he's got a lot better, I thought, defensively.
He's playing like an international player. Yeah. I think actually Cash has probably been our most consistent performer this season.
Yeah,
so
I would probably second that.
Even when we were crap.
Right, let's move on. What was the stat of the game?
Well, you can take your choice, but I quite like the Matt Target one. Villa are actually yet to lose a game when Matt Target's been on the score sheet. He's scored three goals, and we've got 3-2-1 wins.
Well, you know, if that goal committee had been a bit stricter, he would technically have two own goals this season, which lost us the game. And he gave away a penalty against Arsenal, which ultimately lost us that game as well. So it's about time he paid us back.
Yeah, and he always seems to score. He always scores big ones, doesn't he? The other stat actually was Ashley Young's now our highest Premier League assist maker of all time. 42, apparently.
Same as his age?
Close. That's what age he's going to...
Benjamin Button.
He'll still be playing for Villa at 42, it'll be fine.
Yeah, I like having Young in the squad, I've got to admit, because he, over this 100 years of doing this podcast, we've always, occasionally in conversations, it cropped up, wouldn't it be good to have, let's say, a match day squad player who's older, you know, older experience, has a bit of know-how to, you know, just to be in the squad, just to bring on certain moments, and he very much fits the bill, and he's still as fit as a fiddle as well.
It's a bit of an upgrade on a Glenn Whelan, isn't it, for comparisons?
Yeah, for a senior player.
For a senior pro. And he went close in the... He had a close
with
kick
that free kick, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was. He's the enforcer now. Yeah, he's the enforcer, Ashley Young. Short-sleeved Ashley Young is the enforcer. You can see the guns come out and he's always in the referee's face.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you talk about the dark arts. Ashley Young, if anything happens, he's the first one there. He's learnt from the best at Man United and Inter Milan. He is. He's learnt a bit of that. And I always like when we get a goal. And I think, I mean, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago when Gerrard first arrived, but I think he acts as a really good conduit between Gerrard and he's kind of almost like a player coach, but he's that senior captain figure that actually he will no doubt be Gerrard's eyes and ears.
He changed the game against Brighton.
He did.
He was doing that under Smith, wasn't he? I mean, you saw it in every, the huddles before the game, you know, just before the kickoff, he would go to every player and give him encouragement.
And he, you know, after the game, he'd go up to Purslow and say, "Will you sack this fucking useless? Fuck him off to Norwich, will you?
Oh,
punish him for me, Christian."
burning question of the week to finish off the show by Mr. Terry Bridge. With a tough December coming up, where do you think Villa will be in the table at the turn of the year?
Ooh.
Now, we needed these two wins because we would be one. I think we'd be one place off the bottom three by 1 point. These were a good stabilisers, but they also gave us momentum going into what is, Manchester City, Leicester, then Liverpool.
I mean, it's got us up to 13th, which it's actually a dent in quite how low our points tally was. I mean, it shows you how far off the pace we really were.
Yeah, you say that, but we are 4 points off Europe. Well, 3 points off whatever the shitty version of Europe is.
I'll take it.
Well, no, that's not the question. It's the question is, where will we be at the turn of the year?
I would optimistically say that we'd be the lower part of the top. Fuck you on our unbeaten run to the title. I think we'll be in the top half of the table. But
well, that would be Gerrard doing a really good job, I think.
Which I just wonder if we could... I'm encouraged by what I saw at Palace, I must admit, but that there are some very, very tricky games. We've obviously got to stuff those mustard munching wankers when we go to those fucking canary shaggers in a couple of weeks.
It's a long journey that on a midweek, isn't it, as well.
Yeah, but that's probably
be in and around where we are.
Yeah,
I think we'll be about 11th or 12th. I think we'll make progress and we'll solidify our position here, but I don't know if we'll necessarily be as upwardly mobile as we want to be. But you never know. I think there's a big clump of teams. There's probably 7-8 teams at least who are all equally consistent from sort of Wolves down.
I think we need points from the next three games. And we're talking Manchester City, Leicester and Liverpool. And when I say points, one or two, i.e. more than zero. Any spate of three games, as long as you're getting points from, that means you're not in the decline. We know about 5-game losing streaks. So,
do you think we'd have won those two games under Smith?
It's hard to tell, isn't it?
I say no.
Both of them, 6 points, I would probably say no as well. Just because you've got a re-galvanisation.
Yeah.
You've got the players more focused. Just, it's, you know, naturally
simple,
what happened.
Simple, concise plan. You know, we're not tweaking. We're not fucking about. That's something that I've seen a lot of pundits say about him, that he's kept it very, very simple. Like, this is your role. This is your role. That's the attack's role. That's the defence's role.
Well, you noticed the game against Brighton, Nanny McPhee was not allowed to talk directly to Gerrard, and he was very gingerly. the second game against Palace, he's getting a bit braver, who he kind of hugged when they scored.
Hasn't been long for a win since.
Cleaner chain of command. It's not... You know, I'm not getting at Nanny McPhee, by the way, but it's just got to this point where there were so many active voices. And this is what I didn't really get with Smith as a whole, where we would talk about this great chorus. You would see him there standing there with four fucking coaches on the sideline. I prefer to have my main man standing there in that area rather than like two or three or four people around him. Gerrard's his own man.
He keeps very close counsel, doesn't he, by the looks of it, yeah.
But yeah, but I'm saying he doesn't keep close counsel in the technical area. He's his own man. Smith was always there with like three or four people talking, and it's like I want a bit more decision, you know, decisive decision.
Well, you want clarity, don't you? In the decisions you want, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to go for it, and I will communicate that to whoever needs it. Not passing notes to the back four. And
when that happened, when I saw that, I just thought, this is not a good look.
This is just too many cooks. There's too many ideas. Too much tweaking. And it's like if you simplify this. With a back four that's already been working and clearly a squad that's got talent there, but a lot of it you could argue they just didn't know what it was doing.
Well, yeah, there was added layers of confusion that didn't really need to be
over complexity, which, like, why? It's just stop trying to be contemporary for the sake of it. It's change for the sake of change.
Answer the question, Chris, where are we going to be?
11th.
We haven't improved. Personally, he's not going to be happy.
I'd be happy enough with. I'd go points wise instead of place wise. If with 25 points, I'd be happy enough.
25 points. What's the context of that? How many have we got now?
16. So that would be 9 points. However, we get them.
So beat Norwich. Got to
beat Burnley.
Yeah. Chelsea
and win one of the big games.
Leeds away.
Never know what Leeds team's going to turn.
Take a point there. Liverpool, Manchester City, Leicester. I mean, I would be happy with 2 points out of those. I mean, you know, if we beat Leicester, that'd be great. But ultimately, 2 points wouldn't be a disgrace.
I think I just feel far more optimistic than I did 180 minutes ago. You know, that
I do feel, as Dan said, optimistic. But I think you go, as you'd said, David, quite early in the season, that you look at the Villa squad and think, actually, we can be competitive against anyone. And I look at sort of City coming to our place. Certainly someone like Leicester and Chelsea coming to our place. I think, actually, we're going to give it a right good go. Liverpool away is a really difficult one. That's probably the most difficult at the moment on current form. Yeah. Teams come into Villa Park, I think we've generally, bar a few fleeting moments against Wolves, 10 minutes against Wolves and West Ham, we've actually been pretty good at Villa Park.
We'll make things exciting, though, after we've been dicked by City, Leicester and Liverpool. And we're we'll be back. The fun will be back then.
But I mean, that's the test, is to find out how robust and durable we are. I think the next three games are a nice test of that. Regardless of results, you know, if we get hammered 4-0 at Anfield, Manchester City blow us away and Leicester beat us, then you're thinking, shit, we've got work to do here. Back to the drawing board, Stevie G. But I don't think we will. I think we've got the players to hurt anybody. It's just, have those players had enough game time so far because of, you know, the injuries? Obviously, they're adapting to a new manager, new systems. Are these games come a bit too early for us? But, you know, there's never a good time to play, really, is there? There's always some kind of shit going down with the Villa, whether it's COVID, COVID in the camp, injuries, you know, whatever. But actually, at any point of the season that we could play Manchester City, Liverpool, I think we're in the best place that we've been the whole season so far in terms of personnel being fit, in terms of belief, momentum, new manager bounce and everything. So I'm not complaining where we are.
And players all feeling like they need to impress the new, you know, the new regime. You know, we haven't got to that point where you've got players sulking that they're not in the squad yet.
And we're going into a 7 games in 1 month period where we've perhaps, in terms of quality, in terms of depth of quality, probably the strongest we've been since Martin O'Neill years.
Squad-wise, yeah, for sure.
So that's the good news, people.
That was a squad with Marlon Harewood in it.
And Habib Bey.
Yeah, to be fair, back then, imagine if we'd have had a striker of the calibre of Danny Ings on the bench.
Oh,
get me a Heskey in. Oh.
We wouldn't have been fucking up top four.
Let me rephrase this. This is probably the best match day squad in terms of depth we've had since we won the league in 81. And even then, we didn't have a squad. We didn't need a squad. But no, this is a talented squad, and it's all about the big thing that Gerrard brings to the party, I think, is winning DNA. And these players have to respect him, respect his authority, because, you know, he is one of the best players the Premier League era has ever seen. So, and I like his attitude, and I don't think he takes any shit. And I think he's, you know who the boss is, don't
you? Absolutely.
Yep.
I think, to be fair, like Gary McAllister was the same, wasn't he, as well as a player? He was the same. He was a no-nonsense player.
Right, before we go off, I just want to say a big thank you to all the Mailman Said patrons for supporting the show and also joining us for Match Club against Crystal Palace. Looking forward to the Liverpool Match Club, actually. That will be a bit of fun. If you haven't joined us already, do go to mailmansaid.com and click on the patron link to get more details of joining both Match Club, access to the Mailman Said Patreon channel, and gates to Babylon, basically. Anyway, thank you very much for everybody who's been a member this year. And if you want to join for a whole year, you can just join for a month, or you can monthly, or join for a whole year. If you pay annually, you get 2 months free, and that's 15% off. Thank you very much. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at My Old Man Said and on Instagram at My Old Man Said as well. If you are a regular listener, then do join the Facebook group, The Mad Few, which is dedicated to the listeners of this show. Right. On that note, any final words?
Just win.
Yep. Here we go.
Just win. Right. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.